Welcome to part two of our conversation with Gwendolyn Guthrie about being followed by spirits. That's very odd to not be able to remember 12 and lower. I get, you know, like 1 to 5, 1 to 6 and things of that nature. A lot of people don't have memories there, but that other chunk, usually there is a great deal of memory that can be recalled in that area. One thing I wonder about, especially when we talk about uber religious groups, whatever it may be, sometimes there's very, you know, kind of bizarre practices sometimes that are going on when the kind of the curtains are pulled back. Do you think there was anything there within the practice of the religion that you were a part of as a child? Obviously, you had no choice in the factor of it, but something there that, you know, connects with this that either held back something from you or gave you something that was either beneficial or negative to create that separation?
Actually, yeah, I do wonder that because with my family and the religious ways that they used to live, I thought maybe there was something more to, you know, why I had that disconnect. So I went to a psychic, and when I went to the psychic, my intention was not to find anything about my youth. My intention was more to find out, you know, answers for why I had this awakening.
Yeah.
And the psychic actually told me that I'm trying to think of the wording she used. You were bound. You were bound and your bonds were only released partially released, is what she said. And she had no answer for how to completely unbind myself, but she said my awakening was that unbinding situation.
Yeah, it's like you were then able to develop all these things, or these things were sitting there just waiting to be unleashed. And then it, as one would normally kind of do year by year by year, suddenly it all happened at once for you. And that's what's so kind of interesting about the psychology of your experience.
Yeah. Yeah. And I can't explain why it all happened in that moment, but I feel like it might have needed to, in order for me to seek out answers. Mm-hmm. I think if it happened more slowly, it would have been more easily ignored. Mm-hmm. And I probably wouldn't had the dramatic personality change that I had.
Sure.
I think it needed to happen all at once, and whatever is out there that made it happen knew what it was doing and knew how it needed to be done. It's just ironic because I've only heard maybe a couple handfuls of other people who have had that sort of dramatic awakening that I've had.
Sure.
And a lot of them refer to it as a Kundalini awakening. Mm-hmm.
Let's go back to your house. You had mentioned earlier the mimicking thing that's there. Did you ever look into like the history of the property or anything like that? Is there anything interesting there that leads you to wonder who might be there for some sort of reason?
Well, no, because when I first started having the mimicry, it happened when I was younger.
Okay.
14, and then it happened again at a different house when I was about 16, 17. Mm-hmm. It happened again later on in life when I lived at a different house when I was about 25, 26, and it just keeps going, and it doesn't matter where I'm at. And the mimic is the one thing that will really follow me anywhere I go, no matter how long I've been there. Mm-hmm. The other things tend to take some time to almost bleed into the environment to start creating things to happen. But I have video, multiple videos of me catching this thing's voice on video. And when I hear it in the moment, it sounds like a very normal voice. But when you play it back in video, it sounds very electronic.
How strange that would change in that sort of way. Do you believe that there are haunted houses, or is it more so there's spirits everywhere, and it's more so there's, I don't want to say haunted people, but I would say people that are able to pick up on it more than others.
Yeah, I do think that there are spirits everywhere you go. I think the people that are more susceptible to picking up on it are able to witness them in more locations. I think that you get your more interactive spirits or ghosts when you go into a home where they almost seem stuck or lost or confused. That's the people that's the spirits that need help. A lot of spirits that are out wandering around, they're either trying to find help, so they're not going to stay in one place, or they just don't want anything to do with people.
Sure.
You know, spirits don't always want to communicate. They just want to be left alone sometimes. So,
yeah,
when you're out in the woods, yeah.
It's not always the let's find them the light and move them on. It's just they're doing their own thing. It's a very humanistic thing to be thinking that I must somehow save this person or this entity here.
Yeah, exactly. And then some people, I'll go into their home. They'll have lived there for 35 years. And I'm like, whoa, there's definitely something in your house. And they're like, no, there's not. I've lived here for 30 some years. Nothing's ever interacted with me.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll be like, okay, but I know there's something here. And it's because they just don't want to interact. They want to be left alone. They don't want to mess with. They know they're dead. They're happy with what their environment is. They're good. They don't want to be bothered.
Do you still experience those prophetic dreams that you had when you were a child? Do you still have dreams where you find out information that you otherwise would not know?
Yeah, I do. They don't happen as often as they did when I first started having them. That was my main source of getting information when I was younger. I didn't have like the instant visual or memory like I do now.
Mm-hmm.
My dreams now, I know the difference. I can feel the difference between what I call a big dream and a little dream.
Mm-hmm.
So big dreams are the ones to pay attention to. They have a certain feeling to them. I can tell in the dream there's something to pay attention to. And they're very convoluted, very confusing now versus when I used to start getting them. Now there's almost like a code. I have to kind of figure out the code and figure out what's important and what's not before I'm able to figure out the message. And it's very frustrating. And a lot of times the dreams I have now where I know they're going to come true, I'm having them in the form of another person that's not me. And I know it's not me.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just kind of stuck inside of another body watching what's going on. Like, oh my gosh, I don't like this. Okay, I don't want to be witness to this type of thing. But now my precognizant abilities come in the form of visions or instant memories or just instant knowledge.
And it doesn't even take a dream, would you say, to have the experience?
No, it doesn't have to take a dream at all. Like I can just walk into a room and I'm like, oh, there's a vibe in here. And then I start looking around and then I'll look at something. It's like a trigger. I'll look at it and then all of a sudden the knowledge hits me and I'm like, okay, this happened, this happened, this happened, this happened, and this needs to happen.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, it's like I feel it first and I'm like, oh, there's something weird. And then I look around and something visual will strike that. And all of a sudden I'll be hit with that knowledge.
How interesting. Is this, and there's no choice in the matter for you. It's there.
Right. Yes. There's a choice on whether I want to act on it. And that is still to this day, my biggest struggle because I am very much a logical person.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard for me to admit that I have these abilities. So sometimes I'll get this information. I'll be like, it's nothing. I'll just kind of throw it to the side. And not even 2 seconds later, I'm like, why didn't I say that? Why didn't I tell them it was going to happen?
Sure.
So it's like, I kick myself all the time. So I'm like, you need to start listening more.
And listen and understand what is going on. That's I don't know that I'd want that ability, but that would be very interesting to have. I don't know if interesting is even the right word. More troubling, yeah. More curious. I don't know if there is a word for having that sort of an experience. I know there's an interest in cryptids that you have. I'm curious about the dog man and your personal experience of a dog man. Can you explain to the audience what a dog man is and what you experienced?
Yeah, absolutely. So Dogman, in no short words, is basically a werewolf. I'm not sure if they named it Dogman to take the stigma off of the name werewolf. but it's basically, that's what it is. But there's different variants that can classify it as a dog man. Like some may look more hyena-like, some may look more man-like, some may look like a man cross, like a wolf that's able to stand up. Some are different sizes, but look similar. There's all different variants of these types of dog men. But I had my experience when I bought my property up by where I live now. I don't currently live at that property anymore, but I still own it. Mm-hmm. And there was a line of trees that went down one side of the property that separated my property from the neighboring property. Mm-hmm. And the whole area was very similar to a subdivision, but it's inside of a state park. And I was sitting outside. I just bought the place. It was one of my first nights there. I had a full-size van sitting in my driveway. And I was standing in the middle of my yard looking up at the stars, because where I moved from, you couldn't really see the stars very well. So I was just like oohing and aahing at the stars because I could see so many. And I was just watching the stars. And all of a sudden, I see those two little blobs run around by my feet. And I look down, and it's two possums. And I thought they were chasing each other, or one was chasing the other. And I'm like, oh no, there's a lot of wild critters out here. So I'm like, how am I going to, I don't want to go in yet. So I climbed up on top of my full-size van to be able to watch the stars and not have to worry about anything running around down my feet.
Sure.
So I'm looking up at the stars, and all of a sudden I get this really eerie feeling. And I'm like, man, something's weird. And I sat up and I looked across the yard. That was where my attention was drawn. And there was like this giant shadow. And it was either a full moon or close to a full moon. I only say this because dogman does not apply with the full moon does not apply when it comes to dogman. People can have experiences with dogman any time of the year. Doesn't have anything to do with the full moon. But the reason I say this is because the moon was shining so bright that I could see like the shadow of the trees. I could even see into the trees a little bit, because it was so bright out. And in the shadow of the trees, I saw an even darker shadow of something moving in the tree line. And I'm like, what even is that? I'm like, that is the fluffiest, biggest deer I've ever seen.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I'm not moving. I want to see this deer. I've never seen a deer with a neck this big. And as it comes out of the shadow of the trees and into the moonlight in my yard, you know, it's all I can play it back in slow motion, because I watched it as it came out and I was able to visually see it. It's nose first, then its eyes, then its head, then its ears, and then its back and its neck. It was like as everything came out, I felt my heart sink further and further. And I'm like, this is not a deer. And I noticed the way I described it is a science experiment gone wrong. It was like a cross between like a wolf, a hyena, possibly bear. I mean, it looks like a cross of different animals, but mostly canine. Mm-hmm. And I've worked with dogs for years. I'm a dog trainer. I have a service dog that I train myself. You know, I've worked with a lot of dogs, and it's actually my son's service dog, but I could train it because I'm licensed to train it. And I just thought, man, this is the biggest dog I've ever seen. I don't even know what this thing even is. It's dog-like. And it comes out of the tree line, goes to the middle of my yard. And all I can think of is, you don't move. Don't move. Don't let it know you're here. Don't let it catch your scent. Nothing. And I'm just like gripping the edge. And my feet were hanging off. My legs were hanging off. And I just kept thinking, just pull your legs up. Just pull your legs up. If you pull your legs up, you can at least get down the other side before it gets to you. But I was scared because I was afraid it was going to hear it if I moved my legs. So I left my legs hanging and I'm just standing there and I'm gripping the side of the van, and it gets to about the middle of my yard. And as it's walking very weird. It's almost belly crawling, and it has its arms, its elbows and its knees drawn up into itself and like crawling across the ground. And as it's moving, its head is swaying back and forth and back and forth, like painting the ground. And then it just stops. And I feel like I knew. I was like, it must be here. It knows I'm here. And in that moment, I was like, okay, my neighbor's always across the street, always making some sort of noise at like 3 a.m. Why is he not outside right now? If I scream, nobody's going to hear me. And as it stops, it lifts its head and almost like sniffs the air and then puts its head back down, turns its body towards me, never looked at me, turns its body towards me, and then shimmies up to where I'm at underneath of my feet by the van. And the only thing I could think was, okay, you've got to slow your breathing. You're going to pass out. If you pass out, you're done. Cause it was like, I was going to pass out. And then he lifts up and almost like sniffs my feet. That's what I got. That's what it put me in the mind of. Now, mm-hmm. I didn't hear any sniffing noises. I don't remember what it looked like in the face. I think my adrenaline was going so heavy that I don't remember any of that. I think that I was more focused on survive mode.
Sure.
So I don't remember what it looked like up close. I don't remember it going back down. I remember it going back down, but I don't remember how it adjusted to get back down into an all four position. But it never stood up as far as I'm aware. I think it just lifted itself up onto its front feet and straightened its front legs out. And it was probably about an inch below my feet. Its nose was at that point. And it lowered itself back down and then went exactly to the exact same spot that it stopped in my yard to turn to come to me, turned itself into the same angle and everything, and then finished its way across the road again. And as soon as it got to the tree line behind my neighbor's house, I jumped off my van and just ran to the house. And I hit so hard when I jumped off the top of my van that I had pain in my knees and in my ankles for like 2 days afterwards. Because it was like, I didn't even care. I just jumped as far as I could, as fast as I could, and just ran to the house. But there were people inside and I was trying to tell them what I saw. I couldn't really get the words out. Finally, I told them what I'd seen. And they came outside. One of them had a gun. They went out trying to look for it. They almost shot my neighbor's little tiny white dog because they thought they got themselves spooked is what it was. And then this little tiny white dog runs out past them and they jumped and almost tried to shoot the dog. I'm like, no, that's not the dog. But I never saw it again.
Yeah.
But that was in my own yard and I had small kids at the time. It was torment. Just even letting them play outside.
Oh, sure.
And they weren't even allowed outside at night for like a year. And that was all. And I only started letting them out there with me at night and never let them outside by themselves at night ever when we lived in that house.
Do you think that it was something that was paranormal or do you think it was something that some sort of weird species of animal that would haven't identified that maybe, you know, like you said, it's something crossed and it survived?
You know, I definitely think it, whatever it was wholly flesh and blood. Mm-hmm. I could see it. I could, if I wanted to, I could have touched it.
Yeah.
It was very silent, but it did make noises when it was moving across the rocks and stuff because my driveway was gravel. Mm-hmm. But there was definitely some paranormal aspects to this thing. It was almost like I was in a bubble because once it hit the tree line and I hit that ground running, I could hear my neighbor starting to work again. I could hear the people in my house again. But prior to that, it was like all noise just went away. There was nothing. Mm-hmm. Total silence. Not crickets, not nothing. So there was some sort of paranormal aspect.
Yeah.
To it,
I mean,
I definitely think it was flesh and blood.
That's, yeah. I mean, that's bizarre. I mean, the argument could be made on that. You know, your endorphins were kicking in and you were so hyper-focused on trying to figure out, you know, is this a danger that all those things would have been naturally focused out of your brain, even if it was a bear that was right there, because at the moment, I'm sure you're not thinking paranormal. You're thinking, what is this? So I don't know if that makes it paranormal but obviously it's something, but what exactly is it? That's obviously the big question.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I don't disagree with that either because, you know, a lot of my work, as far as my research goes, a lot of probably a good 75% of my work involves psychology. Mm-hmm. When you're out there researching, a lot of it is psychology. And that could very well be it. And that is an argument that I would even potentially make to somebody, to another experiencer. Because it was in the moment when it stopped that I noticed that I was like, oh gosh, if I scream when it stopped in the yard, it turned to come to me.
Sure.
It was in that moment that I noticed there was no noise. Because I thought, if I scream, there's nobody out there to hear me.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the first time I noticed the lack of noise. So it could very well be that that was what created the impression that there was no sound. But again, it's like, well, where did this thing come from? What exactly was it? Why was it so big? That's the biggest thing. It was, why was it so massive? Why didn't it attack me? It almost seemed sickly.
Sure.
It seemed very sick. And, you know, it looked a little bit mangy down by its back end.
Mm-hmm.
But its tail was real fluffy. Its mane was real fluffy. It had a little tuft of fluff kind of down by like the back ankle and the front, two front feet.
Mm-hmm.
But the rest of it, it looked very sick. And I'm like, this thing's going somewhere to die. That was my impression.
Mm-hmm.
But I can't explain it of what it was.
That'll be the ultimate question on that.
Yeah, exactly.
That wraps up the second half of our conversation with Gwendolyn Guthrie. Big thank you to her for sharing her experiences today on the program. Thank you to you for listening. If you want an ad-free experience of the show, you can get it by signing up through Apple Podcasts. Even get it for 3 days free. There you'll also get access to our archive of episodes and everything being commercial-free, including advanced episodes of the show before they're released to the public. Check it out. We do appreciate it. Until next time, for all of us at The Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.